We are in Azeel Dasharin on page 64 or 51, or Mem Aleph, depending on whatever edition you have. We are starting the Midah of Zehirut, which your editions translate as vigilance. Vigilance. May we all be vigilant. Let's understand what that actually means. Okay? Amar HaChassid. After a person has really toiled over Torah and looked at the specifications that the Torah puts out and all of the ways that it's learned, what will be produced in his soul, what will be produced in his essence next is what we'll translate, we'll use the poor English translation of vigilant. We'll be vigilant. That's what's going to come out of that. Or we'll just stick with the word zehirut and continue to define it over the course of time. But that's going to be zehirut. Meaning one leads to another. How do we know that one leads to the other?
Because the bright dawn.
Thank you. This was not a trick question. It was just seeing if I got anywhere last time and showing you that it's really just we're following the bright dawn. Right? And that's what he says in the next sentence. V'hu ma she'amar. This is exactly what Chazal said, what Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair said. Torah mevi'ah lidei zehirut. The Torah will bring you to zehirut. By knowing the Torah, that's what will naturally come to produce within you an ability to be zahir. Somebody had a question? Yes, were you going to say something? Can I make that
No, I was just making sure that vigilance, it just needs to be careful, though.
Yeah. Correct. I mean, it doesn't. I mean, if it was just, then we wouldn't have a whole chapter on it. But that translation-wise, that's basically what it means. Yeah. Good. Okay. Ki acharei asher tatbia bo darchei Hashem be'emet. Once a person has, there's no English word for naturifying, innature, right? For making the Torah part of one's nature, but the Hebrew made it into a verb, right? Making
internalizing.
I mean, it's a good translation because there isn't a word for tatbiyah. But tatbiyah literally means it's your nature. Like you have a natural inclination to eat and sleep. Once you've brought into Torah so much to a place, not just that you've internalized it, it's literally like it's so natural to you that it's a part of who you are. He's saying it. I think he's intentionally using the stronger lashon. V'odrachei Hashem be'emet v'tifkach einav, and he opens up his eyes. Lirot ma shelo haya ro'eh mitchila, that which he couldn't have seen before, which Ricky was our discussion on Tuesday, right? Meaning to even see the things that are there's no way to possibly see without the ways of Torah opening you up to being able to see them. Mechomer ha'avoda v'ikara ma shehaya kal be'enav zulata, the weightiness of the work that's upon him. In a way that would have been light in his eyes beforehand, meaning now it's clear to him that these things are very serious because he understands, or she understands, based on the learning of the Torah that one has gone through, how weighty these things are and where one is supposed to put one's emphasis in life. Then the one's mind, one's being, compels oneself to attend to one's spiritual needs and not to put oneself in danger. Meaning once you know what your purpose in this world is, what the goal of Torah is, what the dangers that Torah identify as things that are dangerous in this world are, a person's natural inclination will be to immediately try to protect oneself from these dangers coming upon him or herself. But I mean, it really is action and reaction. Right? That knowledge leads to a very specific conclusion, which is to guard oneself against those things which are going to immediately be identified as dangerous, which one might not have recognized beforehand. Ki ne, acharei sheyesh lo de'ah, as soon as a person has the understanding and the mindfulness to save oneself and to run away from being totally destroyed or being lost in this world, how could he possibly want to close his eyes from saving himself? There is no baseness or folly greater than this at all. And it's actually something which is not unheard of. Meaning, you see so often people say, like, I'd rather not know. I'd rather not know is a way of saying, it's like walking past an active construction site, and somebody with a hard hat running over to you and saying, one second, I just want to tell you something. Like, I'd rather not know, I just need to get through to the other side. It's like, that's great, you just may not make it. Right? You know, but like that's basically what you're saying.
It's really dramatic.
It is, but that's what we say. When we say, like, the halacha, I'd rather not know. That's exactly what we're talking about. If the Torah says, this is dangerous to my spiritual being, that's our response. Don't find me. I won't be the extreme, and I'll quote the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim.
Want someone else.
Yes, throw somebody else under the bus. The Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim, as the mashal, has gave the mashal himself. He says that if a person, he says that he would bring the book Shmir Salashon to different people's houses, and some people would say, like, no, Shmir Salashon, that's not for me. You know, you want to give me the Lachas Vant, that's a dime that I can handle, but Shmir Salashon, you can keep to yourself, right? So you'd say, listen, it's basically, I'll give you a mashal. You're basically telling me that it's somebody who walks out of their house every day, and every time they walk out, there's this huge pit in front of their house. And every time they walk out of their house every day, they fall into the pit, and everybody starts laughing at them. And this happens day in and day out and day in and day out. So you know what the guy does? He says, you know what, I'm tired of people laughing at me. It's not my fault, there's this pit in front of my house. I don't want people to laugh at me anymore. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put on a blindfold. So the next day he walks out of his house with a blindfold on his eyes. He walks down the steps and he falls into the pit. And everybody still laughs at him. And he says, I don't understand. Why are you laughing at me? I couldn't have seen the pit. It's the same rationale. The idea of saying, I know that there is a clarity to be able to see what I'm supposed to do, but I'm choosing not to see it, I'm choosing not to understand it, and because of that, it somehow validates me falling into the pit of folly of existence. It's insanity. When a person doesn't have Yirah, that's why the Gemara in Sotah says that when a person doesn't have Yirah, it has to be because they're filled with a Ruach Shtus. That's a quote. The Gemara didn't mince words, Chazal didn't mince words, Chafetz Chaim didn't mince words. I'm just trying to live in their shadow. Meaning that's what we're doing.
Ruach shtus?
Yeah, shtus. Stupidity. A spirit of stupidity has to come on a person to sin. Why? Because what are we here for? What do we talk about when we talked about Chovat Adam Olamo? What's the whole... Why did God bother putting us here?
Somehow implies that it's so easy to not sin. Not just stupidity. That
no, so that's emphasizing the point that if a person had the clarity of mind, they wouldn't possibly do it. Now, God makes things complicated with the Yetzer Hara, with different things in life that pull. No, 100%. But the Yetzer Hara is a Ruach Shtus. It's basically clouding your mind to do something that you would never possibly do if you had the clarity of mind to know what you were doing. If you realize the cosmic implications, I'm not talking about you personally, I'm saying if one were to recognize the cosmic implications of speaking Lashon Hara in that moment, and they weren't have the rush just of rationalizing, it's not really so bad, and I mean, let's be real, the person really is a jerk. Like, if you come up with all kinds of rationalizations of why it's okay, that's a rush to us.
Right.
We're taking the same way that God creates the world with words, Be'asaram Amarot, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Barat HaOlam, we have creative capacity with our speech. If we had that in mind as we were about to say the Lashon Hara, there's no way that we would do it. It validates that there's a Ruach Shtus, it validates that there's a Yetzer Hara, it validates that there's a war going on here that the Ramchal is very open about. There's a war that's happening here between us and the Yetzer Hara. Yes, but let's not pretend that when we lose the war, it's not a big deal. And then when we lose the war, it's not a loss. It is a big deal. And it takes work and it takes time. But to blind oneself to the truth, to either not seek the truth at all, or to have the truth and then push it away because it's too complicated and I don't want it as part of my life, that's insanity. It's not insane to say, which is something that we've talked about before, which is, this is truth, this is something I aspire to, and day by day I'm going to inch myself closer to get there. That's sanity with a plan. To say, this is just not for me, again, it's like saying, like, going the long route around this construction site is just not within my Bechira Chafshis. It's like, great, but like, good luck to you if something falls. That's the idea. So one needs to have a better strategy than that. One needs to have a better plan than that.
Right. So you'd be striving towards something.
And strategizing. Maybe it's the issue that it's too far of a walk. Then maybe you need to build your leg muscles. And it's going to take some time in the gym to build up your leg muscles to take the long way around the construction site. If it means having to rent a car, you're going to lose some money on renting a car for a week. I'm trying to just belabor the example.
Yeah.
But the point is, you wouldn't go through. You'd find ways to eventually come to a way that makes sense in your life to take the long route because you don't want to die. To take the long route because you don't want to put yourself into spiritual peril, is what the Ramchal is emphasizing here.
Okay.
I'm just like, is it like saying, like, I'm not going to teach someone halacha because it's better for them to do it by accident?
That comes into Shogig and Mesid issues. That's not where what he's talking about. We're talking about somebody who is learning Torah, who has the clarity of mind, who's striving who's striving to live a spiritually full life. And the question that we've constantly been asking in this room for the last 2 months is, how do you do it? This is the beginning of how you do it. Once you learn Torah and you know what it is that you're supposed to do, so how do you do it? The first thing is when that fear comes in of like, oh my God, I need to stay away from these things, the answer is yes. And anybody who then would intentionally blind themselves to that once they know the gravity of what they're doing, that would be insanity. What you're pointing out is, at what point do you introduce people to things if they may not be ready for it? That's more of a pastoral question than a self-work question for myself.
But, like, what if it is for yourself? Like, you know something is, like, a thing, but you don't know exactly what it is.
Then I would keep defaulting to the same place, which is, this is my goal, this is my plan, and this is when I'm ready to open up this Siman of Shulchan Aruch. And this is going to be that day. But that day's going to come. Not this Shulchan... Not I choose all Siman of Shulchan Aruch except for Kuf Yud Tet. That's not... I don't know what to say than Kuf Yud Tet offhand. I'm saying, like, that's not an option. Like, that's not the way it goes. You can say, like... At one at a time. There's nothing more frightening for me than preparing for the Midrashah. I sat down for all summer and I learned 50, 100 simanim of Shulchan Aruch. But now I know that, like, oh my God, if I didn't know that stuff and I thought that I knew that stuff and I really didn't know that stuff, Hashem Yirachem on me and the fact that there's another 5 chalakim of Shulchan Aruch that I have to, Aruch Haim, that I have to get through. Every day of my life I live in fear because I don't know the other stuff. And if I learned that much from preparing just that one chalak for you guys, how much more do I have to learn? So if I were to say, like, okay, listen, so I'll be a 1/6 Jew, Shulchan Aruch Jew, that's not an acceptable answer. To say, it's going to be a rough summer of learning Chelek Bet, that's a plan. You hear what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's expecting anybody to turn over in a day.
No way.
What?
No, just live in fear. You know?
You don't know everything, so...
It's overwhelming in the sense that, yeah, there's a lot of responsibility on us, and yes, we are all, we're all starting way too late in the game. That's the unfortunate.
Too late
if you started from, I don't know.
No, it's the unfortunate realities of our generation. We didn't grow up in a house where, like, we were in Shulchan Aruch, like, oh, that's why mommy told us to do that every single day for the last 20 to 20 years. That's the way that it's supposed to go. Meaning, it should be just reinforcing that which we already know. We live in a generation where we have things like the Midrashah. We have even a Midrashah and Yeshiva system built the way that it is because we're retroactively trying to teach ourselves the things that we were supposed to know by osmosis and through Lima Torah. In a system that doesn't necessarily give us everything that we should have. So fine. So then the answer is okay. Then I'm a Baal Tshuva. We're all Baal Tshuva. Hopefully we're all trying to get closer, return more and more to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That makes us all Baal Tshuva. And as long as you're consistently moving in a path where you're trying to return closer and closer to God, you're on the path. You're on the straight and narrow path. But if you then learn something, recognize its gravity, have it be right in front of you, and say, not this one. That's a question. That requires Cheshbon Nefesh. No and not now are not the same answer. Not now, parentheses, and not ever is also not an answer. Not now, parentheses, but I really hope sometime soon is a legitimate answer. Step by step.
But then it's just like, okay, I don't want to learn that now. Like, I put that off till then, but like, I don't know, I feel like it's the same kind of thing, saying no.
I feel like it's, sorry to interrupt
no.
you. I feel like it's like also like your attitude towards it. If you're like, yeah. No, not now, like... You're like, no, like, I'm not, like, I can't, like, I psychologically cannot get up to this place because I'm only here. How do I get there? Then that's one thing. If you're like, oh, like, I'm not really in the mood to, like, try to figure out how to get there, that's another thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For being honest with yourself, probably also.
That's the most important thing, and that requires to put into it, which is what's coming up next. Go a little further in the text, okay? Vine. Hupachut meha behim. Sorry, he's going to get more intense than even I was. Hinehu pachut meha behemot v'achayot asher b'tiv'am lishmor atzmam. A person who sees, who's taught the truth of how to guard oneself, is even lower than animals who are naturally designed to guard themselves from danger. Al kein yivrechu v'yanusu mikom asher elehem heyotom mazik lehem. They would flee from anything that they see would damage them, would cause them harm. And a person who walks the world without this contemplation, and we'll come back to that word, hitbonenut. He's like, okay, it's a different example. I use the construction site. He's going to use a blind person walking next to a river, a raging river. But pick your end, if you will. Right? He's like a blind person who's intentionally walking on the banks of a raging river. Asher sakanato atzuma. His danger is tremendous. V'ra'ato k'rva mihatzalato. And his dangerous end, his evil end, is going to be much closer to him than any sort of salvation. Ki chasron hashmira mipnei ha'ivaron hativi ubnei ha'ivaron haritzoni. And this is really the key line that we've been talking about. A lack of protection because of natural blindness or self-imposed blindness. Which is closing one's eyes out of choice and desire. It's all one and the same. Self-imposed blindness and natural blindness are two things. If I don't know the halacha, or I don't know the hashkafa, or I know it but I choose to pretend that I don't know it, are one and the same. The only difference between the two is that if you know it and you choose to pretend that you don't know it, I think you're actually in a much worse place. Because then there's a sense of accountability. Now, one could say then, again, like you said, don't learn. The answer is no. Then why are we here? That's why he had to have Chovat Adam El Boro as the first chapter. Because the whole point in being here is to serve God. So it's not like, no, if I know more stuff, then I have to do more stuff, and I don't want to do more stuff. Because why? What's the because? Because I want to do X, Y, and Z with my life. But why do I want to do that? The question is, do I want to live my goal in life, or do I not want to live my goal in life? If I want to live my goal in life, then I want to learn Torah. If I want to live my goal in life, learn Torah, then it's going to tell me what I have to be careful about. If I learn what I have to be careful about, I have to actually do it. The goal is that this is a logical progression of actually living my life to the fullest potential as the Kadosh Baruch Hu designed it, all for the purpose of achieving the ultimate goodness, which in the end we're all striving to do, just to give back to God for giving us life in the first place. When you keep that paradigm in mind, it's powerfully simple. It's imposingly simple. Because it's a very, very clear path with a lot of roadblocks. But the path is clear. And the goal is just to try to remove those roadblocks as best as possible. But if we choose not to walk down that path, we're walking away from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the idea. That's the point. That's why we define point B before even starting to talk about how to get there. That's why he designed the book that way. Sorry, I don't have with all the things that are going on, I don't have a filter to say it more lightly. Kacha, life is... We only have one life. Vine. Yirmiyahu haya mitonen al roa b'nei doro. Yirmiyahu is already...
He was already bemoaning
is a better word. Bemoaning the evil of his generation. They were blemished. They were hurt in this way. Meaning they had this was a blemish on them in this mitzvah. They would close their eyes to their actions. That they would not pay attention to their actions if they were good or not. And he would say to them, is there nobody who regrets their actions to say, what have I done? They're all running their course like a horse that's running into headstrong into war. Meaning there's no thought about where they're going. They're just running straight and keeping on going without thinking about where it is that they're running to. The Hainu, Shehim Rodfim, the Holchim Mamash Bimrutzat, Hergilam, Vidarchehem, Miblishi Anihuzman Latzman Ledakteka Masahim Vehadrachim, Venimsa Shehim Noflim Bira'a Belira Otota. That they're running after Mamash in the ways of their habits, without paying any attention, without providing any time to contemplate, to look back, to take stock of their actions and their paths, and they end up falling into evil without even seeing it happening. V'ulam, one more paragraph, and then we'll stop to process. This is exactly the strategy of the Yetzer Hara. This is what the Yetzer Hara wants us to do, and it's amazing that the Ramchal is writing this in the 1700s. Think about as we're reading this, the examples that come to your mind of what the Yetzer Hara is doing in 2014, and think about how much easier it must have been in 1740, and how they're the same problems but only exacerbated for us in our generation. What's the greatest strategy of the Yetzer Hara? Lachbid avodato b'tzmidut al libot b'nei ha'adam ad shelo yisha'er lahem revach lihitbonenu lihistakel be'ez derechim olchim. To increase just the crushing pressures of our lives constantly upon our hearts to the place where there's no space to contemplate and to gaze the ways in which we're walking and what we're doing to the point where we're doing everything by rote. We're constantly working on autopilot. Right? I mean, this is where, you know, you'd classically go on a tirade about, you know, iPhones and internet and cell phones and no ways to disconnect and all of these types of things. He didn't even have those things. I don't even know what he's talking about. I don't know what they were doing in the 1700s that was totally taking away all of their free time and contemplation. Like, we're like, wow, I, you know, like for me, like, I wish I, you know, I reminisce about those days where I had bus rides where, like, all you had was your Walkman, right? They didn't have buses, rides, or Walkmen. Like, what were they, like, what was he doing? But I want to emphasize. I'm saying that intentionally, and I did have the little tapes.
Our friends would make mixes
for each other. Cassette tapes. Yeah, but I'm saying like that was a thing. That was how you would distract yourself. You were going to distract yourself. Now it's we don't even think of phones as being distracting because I'm always focused on my phone. It's what I'm focused on. What else is there? There's something happening around me.
It's distracting you from your phone.
And it's very annoying, you know? I'm like, to the point where, there was a frightening three-car pileup right outside of my house earlier this week. It was, supposedly there was, drag racing and two cars slammed into a car coming out of a driveway. It was, really nuts. Mm-hmm. You heard all three crashes very loud and, it was insane. It was right outside of a yeshiva. Half the guys are standing on trees and benches and... With the phones, videos of the carnage. I don't want to process. I want to record it. That sense of I'm not even present in those moments where things are happening that are not even relevant to me. If I'm not standing behind the phone, I don't feel safe. I have to record it. I have to take pictures of it. I have to text about it. That was what was going on. Not to the exclusion of the Hatzalah workers, who, by the way, I've never in 90 seconds. They were there. I've never seen a response like that in my life. I mean, it's outside of yeshiva. People literally walked out, grabbed it was like a superhero. It was like a costume change. They grabbed their reflective gear, put it on, and then jumped in. And it was you're all just ready to go. But it was amazing. But I'm saying this sense of I need the phone out all the time. I need to be distracted all the time. That's besides the fact. Think about it. There were never dual curriculums in high schools. There was never a sense of you have to pick between an intense secular studies, possibly having to work to pay your way through college, also coming to the Midrashah, also family who now lives in different places because we don't live in an insular community, also friends who live in different communities as well, also my friends from Midrashah, my friends from high school, my friends from college. Think about all of the pressures that are on us. Right? We're talking about thinking about prioritizing. There's such a deep sense of a necessity to prioritize in this day and age that there never was before, except here's the thing. The Yitzhar convinces us, yeah, it's really important for you to prioritize, but not right now. There's stuff to do.
And that's on my phone.
What?
And that's on my phone.
Yeah. Well, there's stuff to do after I answer this text.
Yeah.
Right? I just answer the text first.
Yeah.
But that's... It's just an incredible thing, that crushing power. All of it, what it's trying to do, is to take us away. The greatest strategy of the Yitzhar Rabbani is emphasizing here is that it's to take us away from the ability to reflect. And I think in his generation it was something, it sounds like, that there were too many pressures to do. In our generation, I suspect that we are so distant from hitbonenut, so distant from contemplation, that very often it frightens us. Don't nobody has to nod, raise your hands. I'm giving this as a possibility. That it frightens us to contemplate, to take a moment to sit back and really think about, am I doing the right thing? Am I not doing the right thing? That's a very frightening place to be so honest with oneself. Again, back in the day, so you'd be able to walk around and all you had were your thoughts. But modern technology has stolen our ability to think when there's nothing else to do. Because there's always something to do. In which case, for so many of us, I think there's a sense of fright even in stopping to take that moment to think of being totally alone with oneself. Hitbonenut, which is a different thing. But it allows for the process of hitbonenut, contemplation. Ricky?
I don't know if it's a fear so much, in my opinion, of thinking in particular. I think a lot of it stems from the fact that people in today's age don't know how to be alone. Because we're never really alone. Because that's why you have a phone.
And that's frightening.
Yes, I think that people are just secure with, that's why you have
phone. But what does the phone do?
It connects you to other people.
Which means that you're never really alone with your thoughts.
That's what I'm saying. So I think that that's a lot where it stems from, that I think people aren't comfortable being by themselves.
But I think you're 100% right. I think we're saying the same thing two different ways. Yes.
I don't know if it stems necessarily from a thinking perspective. I think it stems almost more strongly from the I'm scared to be by myself perspective.
Because then I have to look myself in the eye and think about that and reflect on that. Yeah. I think one is the gateway to the other.
Yeah, they're
very much linked,
yeah,
I think.
Sure.
But 100%. But that sense of having hitbonenut, that's the only way that one can actually fix one's path, fix one's ways, is if you contemplate them. How else can you do it? Where else is it going to come from? You know, you can wiki self-perfection. You could read the page, but like by that point you've already clicked on an ad. And then what? I mean, that's the idea.
So we have shops.
Then you're buying your pair of shoes.
That's why we hope to have shops. But without naming it, what is the movement that's happening right now? An attempt to try to take even Shabbos away from us, to keep, make sure that the phones can stay with us even on Shabbos. Why? Because I'm so afraid to be alone, and I'm so afraid to have that moment to think.
It's not defensive, it's shut down by most, you know.
Shut down by every posek who's heard of the book Shulchan Aruch. Okay, but the fact that there are people out there who are fighting tooth and nail to see if there's a way to please God, let me stay connected on Shabbos so I don't have to connect to you or to myself. That's really the cry. Where the video there is even saying, like, this is what a rabbi's going to say. Don't listen to them. They don't know what they're talking about. Why are they trying to undermine that first? Because no rabbi's going to ever say that it's mutter. And I need it to be mutter because I really can't handle Shabbos.
Right.
It's a very frightening place to be. And also, if you really, as long as, like, all barriers of intensity have gone out the window a long time ago, and if you really want to look at it from a realistic perspective, how have we defined in other contexts of the Midrash, what is Shabbos? Why does Chazal define Shabbos? Me'in Olam Haba. What have we been talking about? This is the whole goal to get to a destination. Of course Shabbos is frightening to me. Because Shabbos isn't only a time to be quiet and reflect. But Shabbos, just like in Olam Haba, I will be nothing more and nothing less than I've accomplished through my contemplation and work in this world. On Shabbos, my Shabbos is no more and no less than what I've accomplished in my week. And if I've accomplished nothing in my week but running forward on autopilot and haven't grown in any way, it's frightening for me to look myself in the mirror on Shabbos because my Shabbos is empty. In the same way that my Olam Haba will be empty if I haven't made anything out of my life in this world. I would want to run away from that. I'd buy that app. That's a very hard place to be.
I think people realize that that's why people who want a Shabbos app...
I don't care about the app. I'm saying my point is like that's the idea. That's how you can have...
People are afraid of Shabbos because it's main Olam Haba?
I think they may not think about it in those terms. They're afraid of Shabbos because Shabbos is the time where you have to stop, think, and reflect. And because Shabbos, whether they know it or not, is inherently a time to take in everything we've accomplished over the course of the week. And if I'm somebody who's so obsessed with what's the word I'm looking for? Tied to, in the stronger word.
Addicted,
thank you. Addicted to my phone, then like... my life has only meaning inside of a very small box, literally and figuratively.
Right.
And nowhere in a place where I can be alone with myself. That we live in a generation where we're dealing with cases of teenagers who are being sent to hospitals for levels of sleep deprivation that are only seen in war zones. Because they're leaving their phones on under their pillows because they don't want to miss a text or a phone call to be part of a conversation. Mm-hmm. And the texts from so many different people are coming at such different parts of the night that they're never getting to REM sleep. And they're being put into the hospital for levels of sleep deprivation that are equal to those of a war zone. Because they can't be alone, even in their thoughts of their sleep. That's a real thing. This is not even being dramatic. These are things that the world is trying to deal with. What do you do? And the question is you make time to be meet the bonin. We need to take time to think, to stop, to take a step back, to reflect. And if you want to take it one step further, one last step further, then we'll just read through the rest of the text. Those people have to head out. It's totally fine. What is hitbonenut? What's at the source of the word hitbonenut? We've actually talked about this before. What's the root? What's the shorish of the word hitbonenut, or what could be associated with the shorish of hitbonenut? Good, bina, which makes sense because hitbonenut means to create knowledge. It's also related to the word
boneh,
binyan or boneh. There's no way to create structure out of your life, to build yourself up as a person, to build your life up in a meaningful way. It's all through hit bonenut. Ani lo yachol livnot im in li hit bonenut. I can't build myself as a person without being hit boneh, without contemplating. It's the way in which we create ourselves. It's the reflective and constructive process. And if we deny ourselves of that, we become nothing more than, like we said, and I think it was in Mesilas Sharam anyway, than that person who's sitting in the rowboat merrily rowing downstream and not really getting anywhere. But that's what Hitbonenut does for us. It takes us away from that simply going down the stream of life and not knowing where it's taking us and honestly not taking us anywhere. We have to fight against the tide. and that comes through Ikhlamenut. Food for thought. Let's see the text. Let's see more on the text and come back to it. But things to think about over Shabbos.
We must build knowledge.
What?
I'll give out
the roots. The letters are related to each other. The letters of the words are related to each other. So there's a relationship between the words.
No, I'm saying one of them means to build knowledge.
He is to contemplate. The way that we truly build our knowledge is through contemplation. Is the link between the words. It's to build. Bona means to build. Yeah. Okay, so let's go a little further. At the beginning of that paragraph, Ulam. This is the strategy of the Yitzhahara. I mean, everything here is going to emphasize what we talked about, so we're just going to read through the text. To increase a person's work b'tmidut constantly, in the hearts of a person, until there's no room for them to contemplate, to look at the ways in which they're walking. The Yitzhahara knows that if we were let go for a second to contemplate our ways, he knows that we would immediately begin to regret our actions and think about a better way to live. Nobody wants, if a person that takes the time to contemplate and realizes they're doing something wrong, nobody wants to be wrong. So there comes the inevitable and natural need to try and rectify, to be mitakein, to fix, to build. And so the HR can't let go for a second. And the regret would keep going and growing and growing and growing until they would leave behind their sin entirely. And that's the worst fear of the Yitzhara. This is exactly what Paro was saying, what meant when he said, he said, as soon as Moshe Rabbeinu came and started speaking truth, what was the response of Paro the first time?
Give them more work.
Double their workload. Why? Don't let them think about what he's saying. Because if they start to think, it's the end. If they start to contemplate, it's the end. And Paro knew that. Paro is the embodiment of the physical world, Mitzrayim, the physical world coming and bringing us to a place where we're constricted and bound within the narrow confines of a little box like a phone. It's Mitzrayim, it's borders and boundaries that are binding us up. So Mitzrayim Paro immediately responds. Increase their work upon them and make sure that they do it and let them not pay attention to these lies, meaning don't pay attention to the truth. Don't give them an inch, don't give them any space, to put any attention, to think about it at all. He wanted to make sure to that they were constantly engaged in other things. By not being able to contemplate because of the continuous avoda that would never stop. So too is the advice of the Yitzhahara, mamash, al bnei ha'adam. He ish milchamahu. The Yitzhahara is a warrior, umilomad ba'ar mimut, and is well versed in the tactics of war. Uva haremez alav aktuvim, and there's a hint to this in the text itself. The first Yitzhahara that manifests is the Nachash, v'Nachash ya arum. The Nachash was crafty. It had armimut. It had tactics. The efshar lihi malit mimenu, and there's no way to escape him. Ela b'chokhma rabah v'hashkafat gdola, with tremendous knowledge and a strong outlook on life. Gazing on one's life. Humash Navi Tzoveach Omer, this is what the Navi cried out and said, Simu levavchem al darchechem, place your hearts on your ways. Think about it. The Nevi'im were screaming this out for 1,000 years ago. This is a plague on man from time immemorial. To stop and think. To take advantage of the moment. To be present. To contemplate. And to build. From time immemorial. Ushlomo amar b'chachmato, and Shlomo also said, Al titein shina le'enecha, don't let your eyes sleep, and don't let slumber overcome your eyelids. Hinatzel kitzvi miyad, save yourself like a, tzvi, it's like a deer from the hand of the hunter, ukitzipor miyad yakush, and like a bird from the hand of the bird catcher, meaning always be on the lookout for the Yitzhahara who's trying to drag you down. And our sages have said, Anybody who intentionally places the ways of their life in this world, who plots out a course for their lives in this world, will merit and see the Yeshua of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world to come. Even a person who's watching out for themselves, one who sets forth a path for themselves in Olam Hazeh, they will see God save them in this world. They will see the salvation of God in this world. Meaning what? And this is key. This is very important. Even a person who does keep watch over themselves, it's impossible for a person to have the strength to save oneself without a Kadosh Baruch Hu helping them. Meaning our job is to contemplate, to chart that path. A kol bidei shamayim chutz miyirat shamayim, to build our yirat shamayim. We're talking here about yirah. To build our yirat shamayim. And everything else is a kol bidei shamayim. God will decide whether he lets us see that through. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu, if we decide we're going to try to jump over the impossibly large chasm that stands between us and Avodas Hashem, and we take that leap of faith, out of Yirat Hashem, God will take our hand and take us the rest of the way across that expanse. That's what he's saying here. There is no way to make it over. And it is frightening. But it's not frightening because you recognize that I'm doing it for God and my purpose in this world, and it will be rewarding and that I'll feel fulfilled in this world. And I know that I'm going to receive reward in the next world and that God is going to hold my hand through that whole process. What could be better? It's what we were looking for the whole time anyway. It's the connectivity that we were looking for. We're not alone. Of course, there's a fear of being alone. It's a lack of recognition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us all the time, and we are never alone. That's part of what there needs to be recognition of. And if we take his hand and walk forward, he will take us forward and save us from the things that we couldn't have done on our own, that we don't have the capacities to do. But we're fighting for that. We're fighting to be true Ovdei Hashem. Ki ha'yitzer takif me'od, our yitzahar is incredibly strong. Ka'amar ha'katuv, tzofer rasha la'tzadik mevakesh la'mito. The rasha is constantly gazing upon the tzadik and trying to kill him. Hashem lo yazvenu biyado, but God will never leave him behind and never let go of his hand. Achim ha'adam mefakeach al'atzmo, but if a person lets himself go, as a kadosh baruch hu ozrov v'nitzol min ha'yitzer. Sorry, excuse me, if a person guards himself, the opposite, if a person keeps watch over himself, as a Kadosh Baruch Hu olzro v'nitzol min ha'yitzer, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu will help him and save him from his yitzer hara. Aval im eino mefakeach al atzmo, but if a person doesn't keep watch over himself, v'daisha Kadosh Baruch Hu lo yipakeach alav, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu midah mekneged midah won't take care of him either. We have to put in the effort, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu will respond midah keneged midah. But if we don't watch ourselves, a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to watch us for us. Because if he doesn't have compassion for himself, who's going to have compassion for him? This is what our sages have said. A person who has no knowledge, doesn't strive to understand, there's no reason to have any rachmanis on him. If a person is not trying, so it's his own fault. If a person's trying and failing, we want to help that person succeed. But if the person doesn't put in the effort, the effort's what's required of us. Right? If the world tells us you get an E for effort as a joke, it means that there's a good chance that a Kadosh Baruch Hu really requires us effort. Right? That's what a Kadosh Baruch Hu asks of us. Just put in the effort. And E is excellence. E is what we're trying to excel in. God is less interested in the A or the F. He wants us to strive. And if we strive, he'll get us to where we need to get to. Esther.
So if we see people that aren't mindful, then we shouldn't have to
People would turn around and say, it's not for me, I'm not interested, I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, in our day and age, we're in such a broken and far place from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you always want to try to be makariv of a person. But there's a certain point where if a person is fighting and fighting and fighting and refuses to engage in truth, then you always want to leave the door open, you always want to invite them, you always want to engage them in a positive, happy way. But there's a certain point where you just need to throw up your hands and say, like, I'm always there for that person, but, like, there's nothing I can do. what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Not in a way where you abandon them, but you can't take, you just personally, you let go to a certain extent. If this is what happens, what are you going to do? V'humash yamru b'mishnah, this is what the Mishnah says, imana mili mili, I have to be for myself first. If I'm not for myself, who will be for me? I have to be for myself first. Says the Chacham, to conclude, v'adai dvarecha nechonim v'tobim, for sure your words are true and straight. Ki mi HaKadosh Baruch Hu asa oto pikeach, because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a person sight, Yerzeleha soti verbut sanof. If a person wants to make themselves blind, self-imposed blindness, la niach asmo b'sakana, put himself in danger, v'hashayaya chol yirotot tal yimalik menu, that he has the possibility to keep away from it, but doesn't. En adad sovalto. There's no way to have any compassion to understand what a person's doing if they're intentionally putting themselves in danger. Omnam. That being said, and if Yifat was here, she would have already raised her hand around 20 minutes ago and said this very line. Omnam, ata tzarich leva'er, eich tiyah hashkafa l'masim hashkacha b'drachim. Great, this is what's supposed to happen, but how am I supposed to be careful about these things? How do I guard myself? The midah of zihirut, the midah of vigilance, the midah of being careful means I recognize that when I learn Torah, there are things that I need to stay away from. But like we've all been saying, that's really, really hard. So tachlis, how do I do it? To be continued on Tuesday.